Okay, this hour we're going to take your phone calls, conversations with Linda, but also if you're a whistleblower, check in with us and give us a tip or two for Linda to follow up on. She has had some incredible stories. I mean, absolutely incredible because of tips from you. So we'll do that next on Coast to Coast AM. Hey, Linda, what are your plans for the holidays? What are you doing on Thanksgiving and Christmas?
Well, I have a lot of travel this season, some of it vacation and some of it work. And hopefully by the spring, I'll be able to do a coast about some of the work I'm doing.
Super. Now, and what's your schedule for us in November, December?
I don't have my calendar in front of me.
So you're not going to be on Thanksgiving night,
no,
right? So we've moved that.
I think it's the 23rd, isn't it? November 23rd. And then December 16th, I believe those are the
okay.
2 days.
So you're going to be a week before in December and a day or so before?
In Thanksgiving.
On Thanksgiving. Okay,
yep.
Great.
And listen, I have received a fascinating email. I'd like to share this because this shows that there are people out there with information that can be quite extraordinary. And as you were saying before the break, if people have information and can get in touch with me at earthfiles@earthfiles.com, so my email is the same word as my news website, which is earthfiles.com. The email is earthfiles@earthfiles.com. And this is the email, quote, "My father was one of the head techs working for Boeing during most of the events in your article about the 20 ICBM shut down by UFOs at Malmstrom Air Force Base in March 1967. As a teenager living with my father during some of those events, he told me a lot more about what actually happened to those missiles besides the electronic problems. And not just the missiles and personnel were affected. Some of the concrete covering for the missiles have been removed and set aside off of their tracks. I did not see any references to this damage to the warheads. To me, that's as interesting almost as anything else. According to what my father told me, the warheads were dead. No radioactive material was left usable for anything other than a paperweight." Close quote.
Jeez.
Now, this is quite
stuff.
Fascinating. Yeah. And if there's anybody else listening who can give me any other firsthand testimony about concrete being literally lifted from over the missile silos at Echo, Oscar, at Malmstrom, or at Minot, or at Warren on any of these years, I sure would like to hear from you at earthfiles@earthfiles.com. And George, it means that as much as Bob Salas and others have been able to speak from their firsthand testimony, that there are so many details and incidents that none of us know anything about.
All right, to the phones we go. We'll go to Salt Lake City, Utah, first of all, west of the Rockies. Go ahead, Matt. You're up with us.
Hi, George. Linda? Hi.
Yes.
I was totally shocked because I found a cat, just like you were talking, the front half.
Really?
Right, and it was cut right down, right like he was surgically cut right behind the front legs.
And where are you located, or where did you find that half cat?
In my front yard, like it was dropped right in the front yard. I know it was in the back, but when I was driving up the driveway, it was there, and I thought it was asleep. When I walked up to it,
what date and where exactly are you?
Salt Lake City, right up on the east side, looking down on Salt Lake City.
Okay, the east side of Salt Lake. And what date did you find the half cat?
You know, I couldn't tell you. I know it was a couple months back, and they said it was a coyote, but I just couldn't see how it would do it because there was no tear marks, no bite marks, no nothing. It was just clean, like you said, no blood anywhere.
Yeah, coyote is the weather balloon explanation when it comes to half cats. But it doesn't cut it at all.
It does make sense.
No, and when you go to the hard forensic evidence that Dr. Altshuler and I were able to accumulate, and it had an entire half cat shipped from Vancouver to his lab in Denver, and he was able to see that the collagen and the hemoglobin had been cooked, that something of heat had been used to cut that cat in half, and the cautery would explain why there was no blood, but it doesn't explain why there is no carbon residue on the large animals and on the cats.
Well, that's what I found, just like that. I just want to let you know that.
Well, if anything more happens like that in Salt Lake, please let me know, because there are so many efforts by local authorities to suppress these stories that they don't want to deal with the public and the media. So it is a huge help for anybody living anywhere when they hear about something like this. Get in touch with me. Let me know whether it is a newspaper headline or a local radio or TV station. Let me know when you hear about something like this, and I'll see what more I can learn.
What do you think's going on, Linda? What's your gut tell you?
Well, I think that I would boil the large animal mutilations down to what several people in military and intelligence have suggested over the years, and that is a genetic harvest. But once you've said that, what is the genetic harvest for?
Right.
And then when it comes to the half cats, I suffer allergies.
Bad time for allergies.
Yeah, all through the year. And if I take allergy medicine, it makes me too sleepy, so I try to do these shows without any medicine, and so I apologize. But the half cats, because it isn't just half cats. It's dogs, rabbits. There are a lot of small animals involved. But the cats are something that humans relate to as family. So if we are dealing with another intelligence that is not human, and it chooses to focus periodically on cats and do so in a way that is beyond repulsive, it's scary. I think it is a message, just like what happened at the ICBM missile silos, that something is going on that is a tension between, let's say, Earth human leaders and whatever the non-humans are, and that there must be some kind of communication, and there must be static or stress, and it's not overt. But I personally think that there is something about the personal nature of the half cats, and where they are found periodically over and over, it is the same parts of the planet over and over. It suggests sometimes to me that there are political, military, geopolitical suggestions in just the location where they are repeated. For example, one that you probably haven't heard of but has had repeated half-cat mutilations over the years is Falls Church, Virginia. Falls Church, Virginia is right in the middle of the corridor in Washington between, let's say, the CIA and Fort Meade and NSA and all of that. It is one of those communities where a lot of those people live. And so that may be stretching, but you've asked for an opinion, and that's all it is, that there is a tremendous amount of meaning behind these activities, as if something is not speaking English, but it certainly knows how to give messages.
Next up, we go to Alamo Heights, Texas, east of the Rockies. It's Floyd Stern. Hey, Floyd, go ahead.
Yes, good evening, good morning to both of you.
Sure thing.
Years ago, when Art Bell did his original interview of the man who had the Lieutenant Salas, Bob Salas.
Right.
I made my own personal cassette of that particular show that particular night, and I've listened to it dozens of times through the years. There's a couple of things that I've never heard anybody mention. I thought I might mention about that interview that no one's followed up on since.
Well, the first interview that Bob Salas ever did was with Linda Howe on Coast to Coast with Art.
Well,
may have followed up and done another one on his own, but Bob and I have talked about how he and I got together and we did the Coast, and he said, Linda, doing the Coast interview with you is what convinced me that I had to go forward with how his life has unfolded.
Right. Well, the two things I wanted to mention, first off, he mentioned that the investigation that the Air Force and Boeing did together after the incident
right.
was cut off right about when they reached about the halfway point of the investigation. He said that Bob Sala said his commanding officer got a call from the Pentagon saying, you are to close this investigation immediately, end of story. And his commanding officer was concerned, well, how do I account for the money spent, for the personnel assigned? I've never had an investigation just cut off like this. He was afraid about it. He'd get caught in some bureaucratic nightmare with the paperwork. But that they did. They cut it off in right in the middle, totally uncompleted.
I think it was Bob Kaminsky at Boeing who told Bob Salas that. And as you're describing it, I think I am remembering that as being one of the strange consequences after all of those missiles went down. You're right.
And also, just on a blind call-in that night after Art started taking calls, one of the Boeing engineers who was in on the investigation called in, got through to Art and Bob Salas, and they immediately recognized each other's names over the phone, and he backed up everything Bob said. He said, I've been listening to the story tonight, and everything he said is totally the way it happened, especially the investigation being cut in half.
And if that was Bob Kaminsky. That's how Bob Salas and Bob Kaminsky at Boeing got together was after the Coast interview that I did with Bob, and Art was the host. And that is exactly the way it happened. Bob Kaminsky from Boeing called in, and Bob Salas then got together with Bob Kaminsky, and that's how the rest of this began to unfold, with Bob Salas deciding that he had to go public with a story that did affect national security, and that it didn't matter how much the military and the government tried to deny that, they all knew the truth. They knew that they were dealing with something that was not human, extremely advanced technology that could selectively, one by one, shut down our missiles and the rest of it that has been going on. And now I wonder myself, even though there is no direct link, I wonder if something else highly strange is involved with the 50 ICBMs having to be taken offline Saturday, and that it's all part of a syndrome in which we have technical glitches that can be produced from a force outside of our underground ICBMs.
You know, we need about 10 more Bob Salases as whistleblowers, at least, don't
yes.
we?
Anybody out there with more information, please get in touch with me. And I always respect confidences. I do not always have to give out names and locations. So if anybody listening has more information about any of these UFO interactions with ICBMs, please get in touch with me.
All right. Next up, we go to Lynette in Santa Fe, Texas. Go ahead, Lynette. Thanks for calling.
Yeah, I'll make this quick. Linda, you are an angel to do this for everyone. You sacrifice so much to do this.
Well, thank you. It is a difficult path, but I can't imagine doing anything else when we're on a planet that is living such a lie.
Well, you are your informational guardian angel. Nicotine was voted by Congress to be a controlled substance. I don't see how the FDA doesn't ban the product if they're not brought to task to address the issue as far as the what you were saying, the additive.
Oh, you're talking about the imidacloprid?
Yes.
The nicotine-based insecticide?
Yes, and I would suggest any listeners to actually call the FDA and ask for some accountability. You know, we let these things filter through into society. We don't stand up and ask for accountability. We're just sort of sitting there pacified and mesmerized by television and all the pablum that comes out.
Well, I completely understand and sympathize with the emotion in your question, because it's what I was raising in that half hour about the honeybee situation. Who do any of us go to anymore to try to leverage any kind of pressure or to get any truth? In other words, the FDA, the USDA, you can go through so many agencies that, and the Environmental Protection Agency, all are supposed to have the Earth's life's interests, the best interests, as their goal. And yet everyone now knows that we are in a nation and where all those agencies appear to be bought and sold. That is not a new statement. And the fact that our government now is a corporately, it's a corporate-driven, corporate money-driven, this current election should be an embarrassment to everyone, that the Supreme Court opened up the floodgates for corporations to be treated as individuals. And every night on the news are these stories about the multi-millions of dollars coming from secret sources trying to affect the election of the United States. The issue is Bayer and corporations are the money drivers of the planet. And we are now in this terrible conundrum. How does any citizen, how does any group of citizens have any leverage on truth from corporations and governments driven by corporations?
Maybe the bottom line truth is, Linda, we don't have any leverage.
And how do we go forward knowing that we're not getting the truth from any agency or military anymore on any subject?
Do you think it's too late? Do you think this industrial military complex has taken over to the point where it can't be stopped?
Eisenhower warned, and Eisenhower warned because he had a tremendous amount of knowledge about extraterrestrial biological entities as being part of the secret that the military-industrial complex wanted to hide. I think that is very well established. Stanton Friedman, I'm sure, would agree if he were on the phone with us. And when you realize that Dwight D. Eisenhower was trying to give a big warning, and that we're sitting here in 2010 in a country that is called the United States of America, but is basically unrecognizable to most people, and that's where the angst is. Everyone knows that it is a sick country, and all of the priorities are bass-ackwards and upside down, and nobody knows how to fix it.
Nope. First-time caller, Samantha. Go ahead, Samantha.
Yeah, I just wanted to thank you for, first off, vindicating me. I've been telling my friends and my family, well, my husband, that when I was a kid, I had actually seen a UFO at Malmstrom Air Force Base, where I grew up.
Mm-hmm.
And tonight, as I'm driving down to our beach house, you guys are talking about Malmstrom and Great Falls,
right?
And I was a firsthand witness to the sighting in 1975.
What did you see?
Well, actually, when I was standing at the end of the driveway at my friend's house, and my dad, who was in the Air Force, worked at NORAD before they actually shut it down at Malmstrom, and they locked the base down. Not only did we have UFOs over the missile silos, we had them over the airport, in town, and our flight line.
Did they look like circular craft?
It was just lights. All I remember was lights. And my friend's mother running out screaming, get into the house.
Gosh, let me tell you, that's an incredible story, Samantha. Because you back up what so many of these military guys have been talking about for years. We'll be back with final phone calls with Linda Moulton Howe. Well, what a better way to spend the Halloween weekend than listening to Coast AM. And we've got our own little trick and treat for you. The treat, of course, we've got Art Bell filling in for me tomorrow as he talks to the ghost investigators with some more EVP sounds. And then Ian Punnett on Saturday, and then Art will do his traditional ghost-to-ghost show on Halloween Sunday, live from the Philippines. When we come back, let's take final phone calls with Linda Moulton Howe on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, I'm with Linda Moulton Howe here, and we'll take your final phone calls this segment. Linda, beyond the traveling, any conferences coming up for you?
That will start again in the spring.
Me too.
Yeah.
Yeah, I try to slow down in the last quarter of the year, you know, for the holidays, going back to see my my kids and things like that while doing the program. And then one little week vacation out of the year, and then it's back to the grind.
That's right.
Let's go to the phones. We'll go to Pat in Santa Fe, Texas. Go ahead, Pat. Thanks for calling.
Good morning.
Hi.
To you and to Linda.
Thank you, Pat.
I've spoken to you before, and I've never told you how much I appreciate your show. And I take my hat off to Linda and your other guests. They really put their life on the line.
They do.
Telling things.
They do.
And I wanted to tell you, my husband was in the Air Force, and he used to guard the Beaumont missiles.
Mm-hmm.
And he said that there were times that those missiles would come on by themselves. And sometimes before he could get there, it would shut off. But he said there were times that that missile would come up.
You mean almost like launch ready?
Yes.
Wow, that's scary.
That's scary.
Yeah.
And it got so bad that right before it was time for him to his end in the Air Force, he said, one time, the missile went so far that it was starting to fire up, and then all of a sudden, it cut off. He tried to cut it off, and he couldn't cut it off, and all of a sudden, it just cut off.
Well, in that June 6th, 1968 event in Minot, North Dakota, this is what I mentioned earlier, where some of the security guards were reported to be motionless like statues, as if their bodies were under control of something else. Well, in that incident, the sergeant contacted officers down in the silo, and the officers down in the silo, this would be like where Bob Salas would have been. They were extremely upset and agitated, and the officers said the missile had become armed and unlocked in launch mode with an armed warhead, and that the humans had nothing to do with what was happening, and overhead were UFOs. So,
right,
underscoring exactly what you are saying, that the interactions between the red, orange, fiery-looking disks and missiles has ranged from taking them offline like it's a demonstration. We can take them completely offline and there's nothing you can do. We can arm them as if they are going to launch and there's nothing you can do. And that we are going to make sure that you understand we can interfere.
You're so right. It scared my husband so bad when his time was up, he got out. He said that was enough for him.
Well, you know, philosophically, I've often thought that anything that is trying to prevent humans from launching nuclear wars must be advanced, must be trying actually to help the Earth. I don't look myself at trying to make sure that we don't launch nuclear war as being something bad. And that's part of the gulf of not understanding what we're dealing with. There may be that the priority of the other intelligences is to preserve life on this planet, not destroy it, where humans seem to always be heading toward wars.
You know, Linda, it's kind of frightening, though, to know that our missiles can go on and off at will, something or somebody controlling them from afar.
Yes, I'm sure that has disturbed the Joint Chiefs of Staff or whoever is in charge at the Defense Intelligence Agency, the Central Intelligence Agency, the National Reconnaissance Organization, and all the alphabet soup. This probably drives them crazy, but the bottom line on the missiles as well as animal mutilations is it keeps happening, which means the humans don't have any control over what is doing any of it.
Okay, back we go. Let's go to Willis in Bozeman, Montana, west of the Rockies. Hi, Willis.
Hey there, George and Linda.
Hi.
I'm actually calling tonight. The show actually hit kind of close to home. I'm a first-time caller. Like I said, I'm actually from Great Falls, Montana, and a lot of the surrounding farm communities.
Yes.
And I'm also an aspiring plant pathologist. That's my course of study, and I actually studied in Missoula, Montana, and am familiar with a lot of those entomologists' work.
Right.
And I basically can confirm, I mean, there is a lot of confirmed UFO activity in the Great Falls area. I've experienced some firsthand, have plenty of friends who have as well. But in addition to that, my main reason for calling was back in the early 60s, I believe, my grandmother, who is a rancher, actually had a series of cow mutilations. And I believe they are actually compiled in a book about paranormal activity located here in Montana called...
Mystery Stalks the Prairie.
Yes, she's the owner of the, I believe it was the Sun River Ranch at that time, with the two adult male and female mutilations, which is kind of strange considering they're usually calves. But it was very interesting. I've seen the photos she showed me. And the great thing about it is that she's a very respectful woman, not one to possibly lie about anything along these lines, and she is entirely convinced that it's otherworldly, and I am in full agreeance.
Yes, and I interviewed at great length Deputy Wolverton, who is the co-author on the book Mystery Stalks the Prairie, and there were many astonishing things that happened that included they had the first known serrated edge on one of their mutilated animals, and when that was examined, it was found that it was high heat. We have found these serrated edges, it looks like pinking shear, from Oregon to Montana to Colorado, many places, and when they are actually analyzed by people who are pathologists, high heat is what you end up in reports. Another thing was Keith Wolverton in Mystery Stalks the Prairie, which I did get permission to, from them to reprint Mystery Stalks the Prairie electronically at earthfiles.com. It's in my archives. The entire book has been reprinted, and anybody who subscribes to Earth Files can read Mystery Stalks the Prairie, which I think is one of the most important books in the field. And Keith Wolverton told me about the rancher who came in to the sheriff's office in Great Falls and said, I just went to go hunting with my 30-06. I was rounding a hill, and there was this 8 or 9 foot reddish-brown tall primate standing in front of me, and I shot at it, and it disappeared in a flash of light. That was Keith Wolverton. It's in the sheriff's office files back from the 1970s, and it was 1975 November that my own brother was scrambled when they had a huge 300-foot diameter orange fluorescent disc sitting right down over Kilo 7 at Malmstrom. And my brother was involved in his helicopter. There were F-106s that were called to go where this big thing was sitting down over the missile. And the security alert team said that when the jets showed up above where they knew that this big, huge football field-sized object was, it blinked out. And the jet circled overhead, and the security alert team was saying it didn't go anywhere. It has to be there, but it's invisible. And the jets pull back, and this thing is Dopplering up. It's rising up. And NORAD got it at 1,000 or some feet, I can't remember now, above the missile silo, and they tracked it on radar until it Dopplered off at 200,000 feet. And that security alert team told everyone that thing was there and it disappeared and it flashed back on, and we're dealing with something, it's not terrestrial, just like Bob Salas said in the interview. These are not airplanes. These are not human technologies.
Linda, back in the 60s, Dr. James Lovelock created and developed the Gaia theory, the theory that this planet is alive, that it takes care of itself. Do you think that crop formations could come from a live planet trying to communicate?
I think that the crop formations are another intelligence. The question is source. Did Pasquale Galante see some sort of a robotic, unmanned craft that could go in and out? Remember, it was there, but then it was very liquidy and it disappeared, and there's so much of that in the literature. And why I'm saying that is if it's other dimensional or time travelers or parallel universes, it might not be strictly extraterrestrial biological entity from a solar system in a nearby galaxy or in this galaxy. So there's a wide range in which to place the possible phenomena behind crop formations. And the one that I have shared on Coast before that I still think makes some sense is that we are dealing with time travelers. And that there is a reason, that there's a very specific reason, and it may be that it is a mathematical language, and that when these templates come down in the skin of the Earth, it may be that it has nothing to do with communication for us directly, but that it has something to do that is necessary for time travelers that are trying to affect certain pieces of time. That has come up over and over as a question when it comes to the crop formations. And it might explain why some of them are so complex in what seems to be a mathematical language, which separates them completely from the stupid ones that are made by people who go down and trample them down. They're in completely different categories. And the ones that I'm interested in and others are the ones that have had an evolution since at least the 80s with patterns that do seem to have embedded mathematical language in them. And if the Earth or the matter worlds, specifically Earth, may be involved in something having to do with a problem in time, and that the time travelers are somehow using crop circles to measure the effect of what they are trying to do in time.
Let's go to Don in Jacksonville, Florida, east of the Rockies. Good morning, Donald. Go ahead.
Good morning, George. Long-time listener, first time able to get through it to you.
Glad you did.
About 3 weeks ago, on a Saturday evening, we were sitting out on the front porch, and we noticed a set of lights in the sky over Jacksonville. You know, Jacksonville is a big military town.
Sure.
Right.
And it sat there. It must have hovered over Jacksonville for about 3 hours before it disappeared. Never moved, just hovered in one spot. Then it just disappeared. I just wonder if anybody ever said anything about it. I never heard anything about it in Jacksonville.
Was it on Saturday the 23rd?
I believe so.
Well, Saturday the 23rd, I have a news story about this at the headlines at Earth Files. There were not just reports. There were videotapes. There were photographs of patterns, or you might say, swarms of red, blue, and white lights in the skies from Delaware to New York, New Jersey, Cincinnati.
Wow, everywhere.
Phoenix had something very strange reported to ABC 15 there. I called and talked with the news department. And there were at least one eyewitness reported seeing two bright lights coming down in the sky, wondering if two meteorites or meteors would be coming down together in parallel. When they stopped, according to the eyewitness, the falling lights stopped and then moved in 90-degree angles. Those are not meteorites. So what also was over Phoenix the same night, Saturday, October 23rd, and how many other places in the United States and Canada may have had multiple lights over how many cities or rural areas that none of us have heard anything about. So if you are listening and you know about something that you can document that occurred, maybe you have video, maybe you have photographs, Saturday, October 23rd, and that is the same date in the morning at Warren Air Force Base when 50 of our ICBMs were taken offline.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, sure is. Okay, thank you, Don. Next, Kevin in Chanhassen, Minnesota, first-time caller. Hi, Kevin.
Hey. I was just calling because yesterday I was watching a video on YouTube about a man named William Cooper.
Yes. Matter of fact, we have a show on William Cooper coming up on Wednesday.
Oh, really?
Yep.
Wow, okay, that's pretty nice timing then.
Sure is.
He was talking about, it was like a Majestic 12 secret government video, And he was talking about UFOs that have crashed and they found human body parts on them. And he's saying, he like put a great emphasis on this, that the public has to realize that they're mutilating humans and animals. I was just wondering if, Linda, if you have ever heard of human mutilation.
Well, it's a very, very difficult, complex subject. And the bottom line I can get to first is, to date, after 30 years since doing A Strange Harvest, getting into the story for the first time from the large animals and the evolution that I have been through, every once in a while I have heard very highly strange stories about humans being found in what would seem like bloodless excisions of body parts. But when I have tried to get a coroner's report or get anybody to talk on the record, I have not been able. Dr. Altshuler tried, as a pathologist, hematologist, to talk with a coroner who was dealing with a man who was found on the edge of a lake, I believe it was in Missouri. And this goes back to like around 1989. And this was had the classic removal of tissue. But when Dr. Altshuler tried to talk with the coroner would not talk about anything, which made it even more suspicious, but unproved, if you get my point. There have been stories, but if it has been a phenomena on the planet, it is not anything that has been rubbed in our face. The animal mutilations have been global, around the world, in both hemispheres, in the media, in our faces, since at least the 1960s. And one report that the BBC and I have discussed, which we would like to be able to firm up more, and the only thing that exists was an old journal, that in the year 1911, 104 sheep were found on a billabong in Australia, ear missing, eye missing, tongue missing, jaw flesh, genitals and rectum cord out, and no tracks and no blood. If that is actually a case, it's 100 years ago. That means the phenomena has been going on for a full century.
At least a full century. Linda, thanks again for another series of stunning reports. We'll talk to you a little before Thanksgiving. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean LaDesour, Stephanie Smith, Ross Mitchell, George Knapp, Ian Punnett, and Art Bell, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.